First of all, we love this, and I'm sitting in the Jack Sullivan house. What is your name, Mr. Sullivan? 9258 in Fairbanks, and I'm talking to Jack and his wife. We're going to make a recording. This recording will be one made by John Henry Sullivan, who was born in Black River Falls, Wisconsin, in 1871. He came up to Alaska, leaving Seattle in July 1897. Jack, what was the boat that you came on?
The old Alki.
And who came up with you, and how did you happen to come?
Well, we was waiting out for the street kind of coming in Tacoma, and they strike in Alaska. The boat come out there with a big load of gold dust. Everybody went wild about Alaska. So I, with some others, figured we'd come to Alaska, which we did, four of us.
All those men were working on the streetcar, for the streetcar company at the time, weren't they? Were you all about the same age?
Some about the same. I think they were one man.
Uh-huh. Well, did you bring any animals up with you?
We first one horse.
One horse.
And we got a couple more when we got to Skagway.
And then you had all your equipment, I suppose. Food? Did you bring
any? Well, it's food. That's all we had.
Now, when you you landed at Skagway, Jack, what did you do from there on?
Well, I don't remember the date that we landed in Skagway, but sometime in July.
And then you went
We went out on the trail, packing stuff over to Bennett.
Was that by backpack?
Well, yes. And a horse.
And a horse. How much could you carry on your back? About how many pounds?
Oh, 150.
Well, that's a good pack. Uh-huh.
Some of them pack them in there. Some of them could take 200, but I never could.
Well, it seems to me that 150 would be plenty to carry uphill.
Yes.
When you went from Skagway to...
We got all our stuff over to Skagway, Harry Bennett. Then we went over to Dye and bought a ton of provisions there. So packed that over to Chittawa, over there. Valdez Summit.
Valdez Summit?
Yes. What is the name of that?
Well, that's Chilkoot.
Chilkoot is on the Skagway Trail.
Well, I'm not too certain what that summit is that goes over the...
It had a name. I don't remember.
Yeah, well, we can find that out anyway. When we went...
We took this town, packed this town over the summit, and had a boat there. It's a long lake. We put the stuff in a boat and went down to Bennett with it. Then we... Whipsaw down there. It's about two scows.
You whipsawed your own lumber, didn't you?
Two scows, it was 10 by 20. Then all we needed was one, so we sold the one, packed the other one down the river.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's worth a little money for you, too.
There was 12 of us on the scow, but they weren't part of this. They had to have someone coming down. They paid us something, I don't remember what it was.
But you had the four partners then and eight passengers, actually.
Yeah.
But you probably all worked.
Well, we didn't do any four of us coming down the river. You had to steer. Had big long sweeps on both ends of the boat, both ends of the scow.
Had any of you ever built a scow before?
Well, I had built some boats, but I had never built a scow. There was nothing to build a scow.
To me, it's quite a feat to whipsaw your own lumber and build a scow.
Quite a feat when you pull down on that side and the other one up on top. Yes.
I saw a picture of Rutzler one time, but I never actually seen it done. It looked like quite a chore.
I remember up on top, you know, a couple of logs alongside on the pit. And then you put your log in the cellar, and you can walk on these logs on the outside. And one man stands on the walk above, pulling up the saw and the oil, and underneath, and he pulls it down.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm. It's surprising how fast you can cut some lumber, too.
You must have to have a 6 or 8 foot saw then to saw with
I think it's a whip saw. I think you're about 9 feet, you see.
Well, now, did you bring your own whip saw? You would have to, wouldn't you?
Yes.
That would be part of your equipment.
That's part of your equipment, the axes.
How many tons did you have on your skull?
We figured we had about 20 tons.
Mm-hmm. And then where did you go after you went down the river?
To Dawson.
Did you tell me that the other day that some man who was quite famous afterwards came down with you on that trip?
White Horse Smith? What was your
impression of White Horse Smith?
Well, I don't know how that my impression would be as well. He was a good neighbor, a nice fellow to be with, but I wouldn't want to be partners with him.
You wouldn't be? He wasn't one of the fellow partners?
No.
Jack, when you got to Dawson, what condition was the camp in?
Well, we were down in the camp when we got there.
Maybe 1897, most of the claims staked?
They're pretty well staked, yes. You could take the stake somewhere. Some of the upper benches was opened, but the benches were pretty well staked, too.
Uh-huh. After that, there was a big strike on the upper bench there, then. With the young Chichaco, is that on Chichaco Hill, or?
Well, Chichaco Hill is one of the benches that is pretty good. And Gold Hill.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the name of the other hills. They were good. They staked all in war on the other benches, you know, but some of them was good and some of them wasn't.
You and your three partners, did you, were you able to stake some mining claims?
Not when we first got there, no. We built a road house up on the end of Fox Gulch and Sulphur. And one of the guys took the road house. We bought a horse to pull our logs in. And then I bought the horse from the other that I pulled away from. I carried barrel stuff over to the shelter.
Well, when you split the partnership up, then you're on your own. You started carrying barrel from Dawson to Sulphur?
Sulphur. And Fox and Guns. And up on the Hunker.
And then not being a Canadian, did it make any difference to them that you carried them all around?
Oh, they were very nice about it.
Mm-hmm.
They were very nice about everything. We did later on stake some kind, not as partners, so. One of the boys, he quit when we first got to Dawson. There was two of them. One of them. Later on, in the next year, I went down to the Koyukuk. There was a big strike on there.
Uh-huh.
And one of the boys went with me. And we didn't accomplish anything. Come back down to the Yukon River, there was a boat there. He took the boat and went outside and back to Tacoma. And I had two horses and a mule. I got them on a boat and went back up to Dawson.
Uh-huh.
Then I stayed there until the fall of 1905 and came down here.
What did you do with the horses and mules, men?
Sold them.
And we got back up north.
Did you do any fighting in that time?
Yeah, some fighting.
Packing, did you tell me that you did?
Well, the packing was all done at that time. We sleds in,
uh-huh.
We had time for you.
Uh-huh. And you left Boston and...
Before 1905 and came down here.
Uh-huh. And Fairbanks, that was another strike.
Yeah.
Which way did you come? By way of 40 mile, or did you come down?
Came down the Yukon River.
By way of Circle City.
You're right. I first just ran the horses down here. And the sled. And when it froze up, I first them over from Circle over to Fairbanks.
You drove them over then?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And I had to live the rest of that winter. Everybody came over on Terry.
Mm-hmm. How many miles, do you have any idea how many miles it was from Circle to Fairbanks at that time?
Well, I didn't know. It's,
That could be the old winter trail, wouldn't it?
Yes. Oh, I figured about 90 miles.
Well, I'm wondering about the roadhouses along between Circle and Fairbanks. Were they fairly close together so that you had a place to stay at night?
Yes. It was makeshift roadhouses.
Uh-huh.
They were a place to stay.
Yes. Miller House was there then, wasn't it?
Yes, Miller House. There was quite a few houses. A jump off. That was the first winter house out from Circle.
The amazing thing to me, Jack, is that coming in over that trail, who cut the trees out of it originally? Did you just cut it as you went along? If you found a tree that needed cutting out, you did it?
Yeah, you had to do it all yourself.
Did you bring anyone with you from Circle over to Fairbanks?
Yes, I had this train of horses and sled. I took a load of freight over to the hot springs. And when I went back, just rode up with a saw. We rigged up the sleds, and I first these boys who were here in their baggage to their bags.
Mm-hmm.
That was after, before Christmas. I don't remember the date.
It was pretty cold weather anyway.
It's awful cold. Did you, have a new man they called Whiskers? Red?
No, I don't believe I did.
He used to be in the banks. Yeah. Him and another fellow opened the bank on Christian Street. About where the Red Cross used to stand there.
Yeah, right in the middle of the...
Between
first and second, not first one, though. Yeah. Was that the first bank?
No, they had the first fashion bank. Orphan Dusk came down and started the first fashion bank. You know, Sam Barkfield.
Oh, yes, he's well known. Uh-huh.
Yeah. He can't remember, he was an awful nice man.
What do you remember about the early days of Fairbanks when you first came? Was it a tent city entirely, or?
There was a few cabins off the saloon.
Dance hall?
Yes.
Was Judge Wickerson here then?
Yes.
He was holding court already.
Yes. I knew Wickerson in Tacoma.
He's a lawyer. Oh, you mean before you came up?
Uh-huh.
Well, it's, that'd be 1905. Well, Fairbanks had been, the early stampede was over then.
Oh, yeah.
Fairbanks for that time.
Fairbanks was quite a town that night.
What did you do, Jack, after you came here to make a living?
Well, the first, the first winter over here, and they spent the horses in the first town. So we admired over Terry.
You went from Fairbanks to Terry Creek?
No,
over the hill. Oh, I see. Yes. Right.
Uh-huh. All folks were good there. There were order was from one to three camps or outfits on a claim.
Oh.
There was an awful lot of men working there.
Mm-hmm.
They used an awful lot of women. What did they have to look for? It's on the
ground. They thawed the ground down?
Oh, yeah. And used it for harvesting the dirt after it was sawn. They weren't doing any thawing when you came.
Not that kind of thawing, Jack. What did they do? Start a hole and then build a fire in it?
No. No. At that time, they let more about thawing the ground than rain does. You went out here and wherever your claim was, and you had a bunch of pipes. Some of them used just a short pipe, a 10-foot pipe. They set them all around the top floor, and then they took that dirt out. And they went on down. After this was out, they put the coin skin in and then took it out as soon as they saw it. Some of them drove a pipe clear the bedrock and let the steam some of the dirt all in the bag.
Well, I could have a barrel then. That's almost modern, isn't it?
Oh, yes. It was modern, yes.
To get those big barrels in here was quite a trip, too. A long way.
Well, no, they press them boilers in the summertime.
By the river?
By the river.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
You could come up the river here, right out in front of the NC store with people sized boats at that time.
Yeah, that's right, too. Yeah.
I can do
Well, Jack, now we are down in Fairbanks, and you might start from there, and what your impressions of Fairbanks were, and what you did after you came here.
I will see. I forgot where we did leave off there.
Well, we were talking about mining a little bit, and the method of mining.
First, mining I done was over on Wall Creek. So another fellow took over an outfit out there, one broke and new one broke. So he tools it down. I think the next was over on Esther. I remember let that go for a little while.
Okay. Well, let that go. Then where did you...
That was for a little while.
We can always come back to that.
Yeah.
It's something we might touch on now while we're waiting for that to come back, Jack, is your time at the university. I know now we're jumping quite a span in there between 1905 and 1922. But I would be very interested in getting a little of that. When did you first decide to work for the university? Did Dr. Bunnell approach you?
Yes. That was when he first went out to open it up.
That was when the first building was erected, wasn't it?
Yes, it was the main building and his house.
Well, you had were the two buildings there at that
two
time.
Buildings, yeah. Yeah.
And you were the engineer, were you?
I was the engineer. We had to move the boiler in and the engine to set it up.
Was that a steam engine? I mean, steam boiler?
50-foot boiler was the first one.
Live steam?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And we got a generator from outside. And we set them up. Had heat for the next winter.
Uh-huh. What did you burn?
We were putting wood most of the time. He had a bunch of wood cut down on the campus. And I had a horse. I kept it in that little warehouse back of the county down the hill side.
Oh, down the downhill there was a little building.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I had a horse in there. But now I had some more out there cutting wood on the hill. I hold some and then he holds
some. Oh, Dr. Vanell holds some, you hold some.
Yeah.
And then
the one horse said.
The first wood you cut was burned in to heat the building was cut right on campus there.
Oh, yeah. Then we got some coal, but it was mostly wood that we used.
Uh-huh.
I remember there that first winter. Then I left there and went up on Farmer Creek.
Oh, yeah. Where that first boiler, the first heating plant, where was it? Right in the main building?
Yeah, yeah. Where do you know?
There's a little sort of shed attached to the back of that first building.
Yeah, well, that was our wooden coal. So we used it for a carpenter shop afterwards.
Oh. Uh-huh.
And the boiler was in that other room, in the basement.
Oh, in the basement of that middle section of the building. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And we, see, on this side, that's on that side.
See, on the left side of the...
On the left end of
yeah.
the... Before the... Well, the room was built there. No, no.
Well, just that middle section,
just
I think.
Just the middle section.
Uh-huh.
And I had that... that first room, we lived in there.
Right next to the boiler,
right
wasn't
next
it?
To the
yeah. So you could tell when it was going up and down.
Yeah. And then our kitchen was over, was about halfway over in the, you know, you come down the stairway
right.
over on the other side of the
of the boiler room?
Well, the other side of the hallway.
Oh, yeah. So your living quarters were on one side and your kitchen was on the other side of the hallway?
No. We was on the same side, but we was way this way, right?
Uh-huh.
At the end of the, on the corner room.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah. Now, there's so many stories about those early days, trying to conserve the heat. Didn't Dr. Vanell have all the windows nailed up in the fall?
No.
He didn't. That's an old wise tale, and I was told that in order to keep people from opening the windows and letting the cold air in the winter, he just nailed them up to the fall.
No.
Well, your hours.
Well, my hours is all kind of hours. But that one boiler, it was a 50-hour power boiler, but that really couldn't make enough steam. So we got another upright boiler, put it in there with the other. That way we kept it quite warm. But it was a big building, and it was hard to heat.
Not too much insulation.
No. There was an awful lot of opening as well.
I've been up in the attic there, and there's recently, and I've noticed there's just no insulation at all.
No,
it must have been very difficult.
There was just a one floor in there. Well, that was the ceiling and the floor, too. Upstairs?
Yes.
Well, the sun up, I guess, got pretty cold some days.
Well, I think they were all dressed for it pretty well. They walked up the hill to go to school, so they had on plenty of warm clothes.
Jules and Ted were there, that was it.
You remember any of that? You had Jules and Ted working for you out at
Palmer
later on, I know that.
Yeah.
In fact, all those first students, you remember, you had a great deal of love, Dorothy and Art and the whole group of them. So you must have been sort of a father to them, too.
Well, I tried to be.
Do you remember, did you have any stories about the early years, that first year of the university?
Oh, I could tell a whole lot. I can remember them.
Good, let's have one.
I don't know if I can go through the one. Jack Shanley was there that first 22.
Oh, yes. Well, there's lots of stories about Jack.
Yeah. Some good and some bad. Mm. Oh, he wasn't a bad fellow.
I guess most of those early students were pretty hard up. Did they have work on campus for them then? Were they able to give them any work?
We used to give them as much work as we could. At McDonald Bar, let me see things. Are you in McDonald's?
The first ones, I think, was there McDonald among the first teams? You mean the first year?
Yes. His mother and sister used to be here. His father died. I think about that first girl who was opened up the college. He was in here two or three years ago. To
Well, I should remember Jack, but I don't remember McDonald.
Well, no, I mean, I've been McDonald what he's been. His mother, she used to live down to run.
Well, I guess Donald Morgan was the name you wanted then instead of McDonald.
Yes. Yeah. He did live in the hard work. Well, he needed someone, but he was the hardest up, I guess, of any of them. But he was a good boy.
He didn't have enough money to buy books for them, did he?
No.
Well, then later on in the year, you got, of course, more students came.
Yes, those two brothers. What are their names?
Jill and Jill and Ted Loftus came, and the two McComb boys.
McComb boys.
And then Jack Shanley came.
Yeah.
A little later.
The McComb boys were Canadians.
Yes. How did President DeMille heat his house?
Cool.
He had his own heating system,
right?
How about water?
Well, we put in a pipe from the main building down to his house. Dug a trench and put the pipe in. And Jim Sturger done most of the work.
That's right. Jim Sturger was one of the first men out there, too, wasn't he? Yeah. Workers. Mm-hmm. When you left the university for a year, Jack?
When
did you, or were you gone longer than that?
Longer than that, ago, I went up to Farmer. I think it was two seasons. And I come back now.
Mm-hmm.
That fall, and I went out there and worked that next winter.
And that Palmer Creek was up in the Chena country, wasn't it? Who were your partners up there?
Could have been able to Archie McIntosh. He died here.
Yes, I remember Archie McIntosh. Did you make a pretty good thing of that thing?
No. First season we done pretty well.
We got in the hole and never got out of it again. Well, I think that's the way with lots of mining claims, but there were some while we were trying for them.
He'd
be back there, yes, I think most of them would, Mrs. Stone. And now, should we go back to your early mining on Esther Creek?
Well, let's see. Oh, yes. I had a partner that by the name of Louis Olson. And we were mining on Macquarie's ground, on Discovery. And that came out. And then we moved upon one above, that is George Lee's ground. This time, there we had 40 men working for this.
Is that right?
In the spring, you see, we took out two dumps there one way. And they shoot them up in the spring. Yeah, they have quite a bunch of men around.
Uh-huh. What were they doing? Shoveling into the...
No, we didn't know. When the shoveling you're done with them, you're filling your wheelbarrows or your or your car down in the pit, or down in the ground, in the drifts. But these dumps, we took them out on the ground, you see, and laid them up on the hillside, and you had to wash that all again, in the boxes again, in the spring.
Uh-huh.
We had two dumps. That's an awful job, too.
Freezes those things down, too, doesn't it?
Oh, yes, freezing. Sometimes you had to throw those dumps. The ground was wet when you took it out.
Jack, tell me a little bit about drift mining. I think most people have heard the term, but they don't know what drift mining actually is.
Well, let's see. Give me a piece of paper, please.
Well, Jack has drawn a picture here, if I can tell a little bit about it. I notice that you have a shaft going down from the surface of the ground, and that went down to bedrock, didn't it?
Yes, usually down in bedrock, so you can get a sump hole in
it. Oh, I see. It went down just down into bedrock. And then you built a sump hole over a little ways away from the floor of the shaft to collect the water.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
And that was because there was a lot of drainage, and you wanted to keep it away from the bucket which went down the shaft. Also to drain your tunnels.
Yeah.
Then you started tunneling from there, and you would tunnel as far as you wanted to go, taking the dirt out by wheelbarrow and
a car,
until you got to through with the main. This would be the main tunnel, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Then you drifted out from there, and as you drifted into a new, would this be called a stope?
It is a stope, but we used to call it a tunnel.
A new tunnel. You thawed that with a group of a string, would you call it a string of steam points? Steam points. Well, you told me that the height of that side drift might be not more than 4 feet, and if you had 6 feet, that was really good working conditions then. But sometimes those 4 foot ceilings kept the man stooped over for good many hours a day, didn't they?
Yeah, they used to work 10 hours a day most of the time in early days, but then they cut it down to 8 hours.
What was the pay in the early days?
$5.
$5 on board, I suppose.
On board.
Uh-huh.
10 hours.
Oh, goodness. Doesn't sound that much.
What's your name? Bigelow was working out here on Goldstein one right here. He had a big bunch of ground here and a big bunch of men, and there wasn't much going on that winter, and he only paid $4 a day.
Oh, and had that, the men had to have the work, so he was able to get them to work the
land. On board.
The tracks that you ran on these, in order to get the dirt out, you had tracks on, you told me that they were made of, sometimes of poles?
Well, not as a rule. That would be just in case you couldn't know, but they had regular railroad steel, small steel that they used for tracks.
And if they didn't have the railroad steel,
they had to shift some other way.
You said too that at times they used a 2x4 and cover it with a metal surface to slide
End of part one.
What is it? It's sort of to slide
let the wheel roll on.
Yes, to let the wheel roll on.
See them buckets with tumble like this.
Yes.
When you come out and roll into this bucket.
It came up a little ramp so that the wheel bearings should be rolling up here a little higher than the car.
When you see you loading your car, you come out. Yeah, that's a little lower too. The main tower is a little lower. You want to be on high enough so that you can get anywhere you want to go with a wheelbarrow. When you come out here, the car comes back from the shaft and you dump into the car, maybe from both ways.
Uh-huh.
And then from the car man.
How large could you build one of these little side tunnels? How wide before it would have to cave?
Well, that's here. You see, sometimes if the ground would stand for it, you could go clear of the shaft.
Which might be a distance of
150 feet.
Yeah. It was a big room, actually,
oh,
underground.
Yeah.
And sometimes you left pillars of frozen ground to hold it if it would.
Otherwise, you put a crib in.
Uh-huh. Otherwise, you'd crib it up. Now, I've seen from the old cribbing and the shafts that went from the surface to down to bedrock.
Yeah.
That were built so well that they stood even after...
some standing up there yet?
Yes, that's right. Wonderful workmanship in them. They were about how wide the main shaft from the surface to the...
I think we figured out about 6 feet square.
Uh-huh.
Shaft cribbed up.
And that part would take the bucket all right.
Oh, yes. Then sometimes your shaft would start caving in. Big bunches come out. Most of these heavy shafts, you see, have that crib.
Yes.
Or you know how they crib them up.
Yes, so that's the hole. Yeah.
There's some out here on Gold Street. I guess they're standing there yet.
Mm. Well, not in the real early days, I'm sure that they didn't have all those stuff.
They didn't have nothing at all. You made everything, you made it. You had to have some rope, you had to have a little lumber to make buckets, and you had to have a drum with handles on it so that you could turn it around. You made a frame to set these off, and you hooked this down into the bucket, and you hoisted it up on this windlass, and you grab it and just push it back, and you could pry it and only hold it.
Uh-huh.
And you drag that out
wherever you want. Those are the things we need to know about it. Before you had all this equipment, they have now and think they need, but they really did build their own and make do with what they had. But did some of them even build their own wheelbarrows?
Yes. As long as they had a wheel and a shaft to put. You can take a couple of poles and drill a couple of holes and then put your bolts and get your wheel out there and then put on whatever you want it for that.
Mm-hmm.
You can clean it out. Well, there's a lot of them
down there. Well, now, in those really early days, I suppose you could buy lumber. They must have had lumber mills by that time. You didn't have to whip saw.
Not in the early days.
Then again, whip saw pressure.
What lumber you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Or hewed out, like for a door in the cabin. You can dig an axe and trim out a door pretty easy.
Yes. When you made a trim up, Jack, what did you do with it? No lock?
Well, as a rule, both here and in Dawson, it is taken into the banks. The bank purchased most of it.
Uh-huh.
Unless it's some of those big companies, they'd collect so much and then they'd make a trip outside on the boats.
Was the Blue Parker man here when you came
yeah.
to live?
Yeah.
We were never troubled by him, though.
No.
Jack, when I first came here, I remember towards Gold Stream, a lookout station that a woman was supposed to have built to watch her plane, so it couldn't that snipers couldn't get at it. Do you remember such a thing?
No, I don't remember seeing that.
Well, it was still standing when I came. I must learn more about it. It was quite a high regular lookout tower, and they said a woman used to own the plane and stood up there and watched her plane so that no one could poach.
Oh, that's
easy. When you first came into Fairbanks, did you buy property here?
No, I should have.
That would have been a good time to buy, wouldn't it?
Yeah, where would you buy it? It's
taken.
This is Jack's story about President Pinero hauling wood with the horse.
He hitched Harry up on a horse. His name was Harry. He hitched him up to the double ended. He took out to the woods.
Turned up their arms and put a bunch of wood on the side, and he started Harry up. He gave him a ditch between there and the university building, and he drove up to there and he stopped and he cut a jump off in there. He Harry went and turned around and looked at him. He said, "Oh, that was mine." He said, "Oh, what's the matter with that? Well, he won't do much." Well, I said, "Oh, I'll go and see." I went over to him and took a hold of him. And I said, "Oh, okay." He went across this ditch. Well, I never seen anything like that. He wouldn't try to call him over there.
And he said to his family, "Your family didn't obey President in all America. It was just a horse." We're telling about this one student jury lost us who had some chickens out there. What did he do? Get the eggs? And
oh, I don't think they ever tried to save any eggs.
Did he hatch the chicken out himself?
Yes.
Oh, he did. What happened to them then?
Well, he let them loose. They were there on the campus all summer.
The roost? Where the roost?
Oh, yep, in the first tree, they tried to get this guy. Well, they can tell all about them.
What happened to the chicken from well, I suppose they weren't laying eggs. What the president know about having chickens on the campus?
Well, I agree, man. He didn't like any dogs around him.
Huh.
He was dead against dogs. We had a little dog, but he finally let us keep him there, but he gets the day he won't get it. Did you see that girl that was in here, was she in last summer? Doctor, what was her name? Really?
Yes. Olive and Margaret Murray.
Yeah.
She was Margaret Thomas.
Margaret Thomas, yeah.
The first graduate of the university.
Yes.
The first real graduate, I should say. Mm-hmm. Was she there when you were there, Jack?
Yeah.
Yeah. How many years were you at the university?
Well, I was there about 10 years. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Margaret Thomas.
Yes, Margaret Thomas.
This is a transfer tape on a story by Jack Sullivan, 25 minutes. Transfer is made on a WebCore high fidelity at 3.5 IPS to a Steelman at 1.875. This interview was by Audrey Loftus of Jack Sullivan, and there's no date on this, so the date today is September the 26th, 1960, and this is Harry Hughes. Pioneer Igloo 4, Fairbanks, Alaska. And the bird in the background is the trademark of all the interviews and tapes that I transfer at my home.